minute.
Welcome to the House of Static, where we talk to artists about their art and what moves them, with your hosts, Kilo House in Los Angeles and The Static Dive in New York.
Welcome, everybody that has been here before, or anybody that's new to our little podcast called The House of Static. This is our fifth episode, I think. Anyone who's watched it so far got to see the first four episodes right off the jump. And so this is our fifth episode with someone I know very, very dear and well, Joel, my buddy I grew up with. But I'm Kilo House, the house part of House of Static. And this is Bob. Go ahead, Bob.
Hi, everyone. I'm Bob. I am also known as the Static Dive, hence the static part of the name. My mom doesn't call me the Static Dive, but that's
neither do I.
Yeah, right. I mean, that would be very bizarre. What do you go by?
Yeah.
No, it's just Bob is fine. So today is kind of, I was thinking about this when we were getting started, or when we were talking about it earlier. And, so far each episode we've had has been someone we know somehow. Like it's been people, guy that I collaborated with, folks that Kilo's went to school with, stuff like that. People we admire and worked with somehow. But this time is different because we got going to Kilo's best friends in the whole world from childhood and current best friend. And so we're going to flip it around a little bit. And I'm going to sort of interview this duo from Oklahoma. How about that?
Well, perfect, man.
We got it.
Sounds great. Yeah, we've had people on here such as like a life coach to artists. We had the guy on here that mentored me and kind of taught me my mix and mastering things, which is how I actually have worked with Bob in the past before we started this podcast. Yeah. So we've had artists on here that we find value in and that we think you might find value in. So that's where we're at now. So yeah. Now we're kind of getting into the more personal aspect of things, which we'll do this from time to time on the podcast. We are going to bring in his cousin, which you guys are really going to enjoy that episode. So we're just doing people that kind of molded us into the people we are today and hopefully will help you become better artists or become an artist or not.
Right on.
If we don't cry, we haven't done our job.
That's why I wear sunglasses all the time. If you guys didn't know that, that's because there are always tears under here. Don't worry. All right, man.
Sad man. All right. So we should probably, we'll start with the actual introductions, right? So yeah, Bob Smith, Kilo House. Sure. And with us today is Joel Nix. I'll explain a little bit what I know, right? Kilo and Joel grew up together in Oklahoma. And then Kilo came out to LA.
Oh, did we?
Yeah, there you go. Joel works in the film industry and went to college for that and then ended up in Los Angeles, of course, because that's where you do these sort of things. And while he was out there, his good buddy Kilo said, I'm going to go to school out there in LA, so I'm coming out. And what I understand. That I might have gotten that wrong. But so, Kilo, you tell me what I got wrong.
I did not come out here to find a school at all. I came out here to find like a record label because I had no idea anything, right? Yeah. I didn't know what I was doing. Like I'd been in metal bands and stuff, which obviously that is not how it works. So luckily I did not get down and depressed because I ended up having like kind of going to a hookah bar with this artist called Unlike Pluto, who's a dope dude. And he told me about this place called Icon Collective, which was in his mind like a recording studio, right? And he was like, well, you look like them. You wear the hats like them and the tight pants and stuff, man. Like, I think they might be a cult, but you look like you would fit in. So I looked it up the next morning. I was flying out the day after this. I look it up and it's like a production school collective where you go to school for a year and then you become part of this bigger organization and stuff. So then I went and I kind of presented my music of bullshit to them, which was me trying to be a producer, and they were like, cool, man. And so I ended up getting in, which is back in the day. Now we're a bigger organization. We're more of an accredited school, still the collective part. But back in the day, you had to get accepted. Like only like 8 to 10% of the people who applied got accepted, depending on their credentials of how long they've done music, what kind of music they've done, like, their attitude. They really screened it so well that it is technically like a cult.
Was that in that interview?
Yeah, he actually was the one who drove me to see Icon for the first time.
Almost like Step Brothers, we had matching suits. And
yes.
And like,
yes,
great. Exactly. And they were like, I'm sorry, we'll be interviewing as a team.
Right. I speak for him. So no, that's what you got wrong. But other than that, yes. So
that was great.
Clarify that real fast.
Okay, well, I appreciate that. Thank you. So when you went on this adventure out to Los Angeles, go check out Icon Collective, you stayed with your friend Joel. Is that correct?
Yeah.
There
yeah,
you go.
Him and his wife.
All right. So
I didn't have kids yet.
Oh, he didn't have kids yet.
Didn't have kids yet. Yeah. So Joel, how did you get there? How'd you get to LA? What was your story?
So I appreciate you saying that I went to college for film, if you can call it college. I went to a technical college, in that regard. I don't carry a 4-year degree certificate.
What was the technical college?
It's called the School of Digital Filmmaking. It was pretty much right as digital film was coming out. I remember while I was there, it was in Hawaii, so it was kind of,
hey, that's cool.
Oh, that sounds interesting. I love film. Sounds cool. And Hawaii.
And let's Hawaii. Go, right? Hell
let's
yeah.
Let's go to Hawaii.
Sounds great. Yeah.
Sounds freaking awesome. So, but I remember seeing commercials for the first RED camera, which is, RED is a big film camera or whatever. But there was a commercial for the first RED camera had just come out. And, we're like, oh, my God. So it was really, it was new at the time. And so, I went there. It was a short program. It was just a crash course, basically putting you through a little bit of lighting, directing, all these different things. Weirdly enough, I ended up dating a girl who was in the acting class, because a lot of schools have an acting class that sort of coincides with the film school, so that we can use talent for short films and whatnot. So she was from California. After the school ended, I went out and visited her a couple times. And I guess I know I'd been to California as a kid at some point, but not as an adult. And, I'm an extremely outdoorsy person, mountains and beach and sunshine, just
all the beaches,
all of that really just, I get super amped. So I was like, holy cow, this is a beautiful place aside from traffic, smog and assholes. But like, the geographically, it's a beautiful place. And there was a lot of hustle. Right. He came from Oklahoma. And I think
there's no hustle.
There's none. And so there is a little bit now. But back in the day, it was like there wasn't as much. So I think that was probably some of the draw for me. I don't know about for you.
Oh,
but
for sure.
The energy that you get when you go to a hub of anything, whether it's usually like one of the coasts, right? You go to like New York or LA. And me as a person, I'm not lazy, but I do have, my younger years, I had issues of conforming to the surroundings, right? So if I wasn't being pushed, if I didn't have to feel like, oh man, I got to fight to survive, I would just survive. And so that was a huge draw for me coming out to Los Angeles. When I first came out here, so a lot of my friends were actors and, all that kind of stuff. I was like, wow. They can sing, they can dance, they're prettier than me, they're like everything, like they're just these stupid, annoyingly perfect people. It's like, I'm going to have to try really hard.
Right.
And
it's true though.
Yeah. So,
but to emphasize Joel's point, I feel like I've always told people are nicer out here because we all have our own hustle, right? So we're all grinding at all times. So there's no time to just immediately be pissed off at someone because you're in your own head, honestly. Mm-hmm. And so, for instance, I always point this out. I can be wearing a shirt that's like says like "Eat Pussy, Hail Satan" on the back, and have old ladies help me like grab something off the shelf. They'll offer to help me, and I'm not used to that coming from like Tulsa, Oklahoma, where if you look like me,
they were
with like
by the first part of that shirt,
right?
They were hoping
she was like, "All right." But for real, like if you think about it, you're like, oh no, people are going to judge me. I don't really care or whatever. But here it's like, they don't even notice it. It's like, they've seen so many weird things that it's like, I'm not weird.
It's like, it's like Joel mentioned, any big metropolitan area, especially cultural hub, like New York. I mean, you could walk down the street with your hair on fire and people would be like, hey, whatever, that's the thing that guy's doing. You know what I mean? Right. Nobody cares, nobody cares. Yeah. I remember when I was like, you know, I was like in my 20s and I'm drinking like a fish, and I was in the city, and, you know, I walk up to, like, if I did this in, I live upstate, right? That's where I grew up. And if I did this in my hometown up in like in Glens Falls, I mean, I would get arrested like that. I had a 40, had a 40 ounce of oldie in my hand. It was just like 1992. You know what I mean? I was just a drunken 22 year old idiot. And I walk up to this cop. I mean, I was 26. It was the night I was playing. I played at CBGB's one time. Anyway, that would, and so I go out and I was wandering around after the gig, drunk off my ass. And I went up to a cop, just asked him like, "Hey, how do we find yacht?" I don't remember what I was looking for. I was looking for some bar. I'm like guzzling a 40 while I'm talking to this cop. And he's like, "Yeah, it's two blocks down over there on the right." And that's it, you know, cause he doesn't give a shit, cause he's got like, you know, crack dealers and murderers to deal with, you know what I mean? Right. A drunken kid from upstate could just go away, you know?
Right.
So yeah. That's a different, that's a similar situation.
Oh, dude, I was pulled over so many times in Oklahoma that they actually knew me by name. Mm-hmm. And here I have yet to be pulled over, and I've lived here over 5 years. I've never been pulled over here. So it's like very different, where it's like they're not trying to find stuff. They know there is stuff.
Right,
that they don't really want to run into, but they're going to have to. So,
I love LA though. Even though I'm out here, I've been out there a bunch of times, and you know, for work and for play and for family and friends and everything. And I always felt like this, you know, I'm sort of in my element there in LA, even though I'm from the East Coast my whole life, born in Jersey, raised in New York, but I step off the plane in LA and I feel like I just lost 10 pounds. And I remember I went through like the drive through In-N-Out one time. This is about 10 years ago. And I was like, you know, before I was a vegan, I got a burger. And the dude was like, you know, hey, and he was like, and he hands me my food. He's, "Hey, man, rock on. Have a great day." And I'm like, "These are my people."
What happened?
Yeah. He said groovy and rock on in one sentence. This is my guy. So anyway, back to you guys. Back to you, Joel. I just was commenting on the LA thing.
Well, I think you should also touch on the fact that the first time you really did filming was when we were filming action figures that we were blowing up.
We did do quite a bit of filming his sister. Well, he had a lot of...
We did not film my sister. Let me clarify where the...
We would blow up his sister's
Barbies.
We
would not blow up my sister.
And her, she had that pink Barbie Ferrari.
Yeah.
There was always kind of this tension of like, how many of her toys can we steal...
And blow up.
We used a lot of hairspray, lighter fluid, and M80s.
I vividly remember Joel peeing in a vase in her room and leaving it there and never telling anyone. And like, now my parents and sister know why it stunk really bad.
Thanks, Kilo.
There you go. Now everybody knows.
Until now.
Whoops. I forgot.
Great.
We grew up on Jackass too. So
right. I saw Jackass the original in theaters with my back then Christian dad taking me to see it. So that was fully acceptable behavior to us. So
not the best role models, but
it was good. It made us happy. It made me a happy crippled person to see like Wee Man do stupid shit and people shove cards up their asses and be okay with it. You know, I mean, it made me go, cool, I can just be a dumbass and I can be happy. So,
there you go.
Anyways.
We succeeded at that.
Sure. The dumbasses are the happiest people, man. They're, you know, nobody's happier than a dumbass. Yeah, absolutely.
It's true. Yep.
So, well, cool. Let's see. We're just gabbing. We're already off course on our.
I'm watching the blueprint, brother. I promise I am.
All right. Well, cool. Well, you know, so on that note, because we wanted to talk about you guys when you were kids and everything. And, you know, one thing we Kilo and I realized about four episodes into this thing that we never mentioned that he's in a wheelchair. And because, you know, why would we? But it came up in the last one, and then Kilo, you know, and then you were coming on. So like Kilo wanted to kind of touch on that, especially, you know, like just growing up with Kilo in the wheelchair, but also getting into him playing drums. And I know you played a big role in that. So tell us about that, if you could.
The entire role.
Why don't you start?
Why?
I don't know. Or I can start. Why don't you start, honey?
I want to know how you saw it, though, because
Before you guys get started, we should not assume that people know what we're talking about. But as I said, Kilo's in a wheelchair, and Kilo is, before he was a EDM producer, a bass trap producer, he was a drummer in a hardcore band. And the guy in the wheelchair was a drummer in a hardcore band. It was a really good one. And I've seen videos. They were a kick-ass rocking band, and he was a kick-ass drummer. So that's what we're talking about. And now go.
So, I mean, I just know I wouldn't be the same without him, because we met you were in second grade. I was in first grade. He was in third grade. I was in second grade. I got it almost right. Got one of the numbers right. But we met and we just became friends immediately at this school called Lincoln Christian Academy, I think it was called.
Lincoln, right?
And like, we like became friends and then started hanging out all the time. And then we ended up going to different schools after that, but staying friends and just built this weird friendship where it's like, he never saw it as anything different. Like we were talking about last episode, you guys, like how I was talking about how I never saw like an obstacle because it never looked achievable anything. Right. So that's how it was in my brain, which I don't know if he even knew that's how I thought of things. So from my point of view, I'll show you my point of view and then we'll let Joel talk. But my point of view was like, I've already been fucked. I've lost the game and the game is over. Now let's just play fun and see what cool shit we can accomplish. So like we learned last episode, that kind of took the burden of like succeeding in anything off my head.
Right.
So now let's see how was it that you could respond to me without any bit of like, you can't do this, except for when he said I couldn't be a producer, but we'll get into that. Don't worry. That's for a later time in the interview.
I feel like, you know, that's the beauty of kids and, you know, just troublemakers at heart is like, you know what I mean? It's kind of like Rudolph, you know, it's like, we're all misfits, you know what I mean? Like,
there you go.
Who the freak cares? Let's go have some fun. He was a kid. I was a kid. I was like, let's go get into some trouble and like laugh and do stuff together. And that was really all that was it for me. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a time. So in my backyard, I've got there's like a spillway with these big, you know, like it's like a drainage ditch essentially, but we would, you know, go back there. There's like moss and stuff. You'd have moss fights and stuff. And so one of the first times you came over, we were older, but this was after I moved.
Like your other house. Yeah.
I was like, yeah, of course I can get Corey down in this creek on these really steep slanted things. Did we do the rope before or after?
We did the rope when your mother had to come out and try to keep me from dying.
Yeah. So it was steeper than we had thought. And we wore shorts, but really never shirts because it's like a zillion degrees in the summer.
I think actually the same day that we did that, there's a picture that you gave me when I was in the ICU, and that's from that same visit to your house.
Really?
Yes.
Maybe that. Well, I just
wait a minute. I love that. The story just jumped to the ICU.
Anyway, years later.
All right.
For the pneumonia, he kind of brought this picture and like put it in the ceiling thing tile.
Right.
And kind of be like, well, if you die, you can go have fun. At least that's what I thought it was about. Probably not. But
yeah.
Well, he was sliding down this concrete embankment and your skin was getting very nice and road rashy. I had to go get my mom. We had to get a rope and
I thought I was gonna die.
Tied around Kilo's waist.
Oh my God.
I don't really, it took time getting you out of there.
You had to go get your mom, and then I was crying, I think probably without sunglasses on back then. And I was like, am I gonna die? And your mom was like, no.
Yeah, so there was just a lot of things like that. We just was, let's go do
that
this.
That's right.
A bad idea. That was never going to succeed. What were you going to do? Carry me once we got down there, down the creek? I wasn't going to crawl down the creek, but we didn't think that far ahead.
No.
So, anyways.
Yeah. But that's just that, you know, it's funny. I was, when I was, because I have, well, anyway, boys are nuts. I tell stories about, you know, stuff that we did when we were kids. And, you know, it was play. We played with gasoline.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Was that, yeah, that was part of the game, you know? Let's make lines of gasoline and, like, you know, torch things at the end of it. Anyway.
We did more of pooping into things that poop does not belong in.
We did a lot of nasty pranks.
Yeah, on Blockbuster employees and stuff.
Yeah, not good.
Very good. Very good. Very good for my self-esteem.
Well, bringing it back, that was our mentality was we're doing this together, whatever. It doesn't matter, whatever it is, we can do it. So with drumming, I don't really remember how long I had been.
I remember something vividly that I've never told you how this started.
Oh.
But like, I had pulled up to your parents' house and you were like trying to show Paul Hargrove or something. Paul's dad is the one that wouldn't let me go to that party.
Halloween.
So then I got to go to a horror movie and now I'm here. So thank you, Paul's dad, for being fun. You really impacted my life in a wonderful way. Joel was doing something with Paul with the drums, and his bedroom was like the attic, so it's right above the garage. So we had pulled in and I heard him playing the drums, and for some reason I was like, I want to play the drums in my brain. And I remembered like Travis Barker had done like a whole tour with one hand that was like completely fucked, right. And then like the guy from Def Leppard played drums with one arm. And so Joel and me were like, well, why not? Why not try? And like we mentioned in another episode, my parents bought like that plywood looking drum set that was like plastic and plywood. And we actually have a picture of it around here somewhere. If we can find it, we'll plaster it on the screen right now. Me sitting with the drums after I got them on Christmas. And I think it's like dope. I'm like, this is awesome. But the snare is like over here and like the hi-hat like behind the drum. Something. It's like not even like where anyone could play it. And then when Joel came over, it was New Year's Eve like night that year. And I had already set him up so shittily that when we realized maybe I might have to use two sticks in one hand to be able to hit everything, the drums just happened to be where they are now.
Oh, that's cool.
The hi-hat's on the right side, the snare's on the left side. So it's like a very happy coincidence.
You had the hi-hats on the right, like from the perspective of when you're sitting on the throne, your hi-hats are over here, not over here. Oh, that's pretty cool.
So I can hit them with a stick like a normal drummer. And then if I flick my wrist like this, I don't know if you guys can see it, then I can hit the snare. But it's like, I don't know how, like, it went from like, no way I'm going to drum to like me being like in a death metal band, which is much harder than being like.
We practice.
Right. Yeah, I mean, sure.
It took a couple of years.
But I think that's like the mindset we were talking about where I didn't see myself limited and you didn't see me limited.
Yeah. And at the time I was drumming for a couple different just local bands and stuff. One of them was this band called Tribe, and we would do, I guess it was called like percussion driven movement or whatever. And so it was essentially for Oklahoma, it was extremely
pretty progressive.
I mean, it wasn't Venice Beach drum circle, you know, like that level of chaos and Oklahoma style, like going bananas on a Congo. But we actually had, I guess you could call them songs or like just rhythmic, but it was a bunch of drummers. I was, 14, 15, or I don't know. I was young, very young. Right. The rest of them were well-versed drummers. And so I was used to, you know, like, hey, let's pull this, you know, like Blue Man Group style almost, you know.
Right.
So I think for me, I was used to drumming with other drummers in a much more, in a much less structured format than say you would see like NAMM or NAMM or whatever it's called. That's how little drumming I do anymore. But, you know, where it's like Dennis Chambers and JoJo Mayer or something across from each other. It was like, you've got like three toms over here and I've got a table and a chair and I'm like, you know, and Stomp was still big.
Oh yeah.
Time. I don't know if you've ever seen Stomp.
Oh yeah. But that was absolutely.
So I think for us, it like, at least for me, I was like, I don't care. I didn't care what of the drums he would end up playing. I just knew he was going to make something sound badass, you know? And it was like, cool. If the snare doesn't work, we'll kick that out. We'll get like a little piccolo or something like that.
Right.
We can hit over here or, you know, let's Frankenstein this thing Mm-hmm. And we were huge Neil Peart fans too, you know. And if you know, Neil Peart is basically just like a 360 wall of drums. He can throw a stick in any direction and it would sound cool, you know.
Oh, I know. Yeah, exactly. I saw him live one time. I think they like lifted him up and spun him around in the air while because his drums circled. It was crazy. Anyway.
Just wherever. It's all
literally gone. Like it's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that was part of it too. Is we wanted to play together.
That could have been all of it though, because you helped me learn how to skateboard, longboard, stuff that you would not suggest a normal person do in certain situations. And then you were like, "You do it. What's the worst that can happen? You already can't walk. If you fall, nothing bad can happen." Yeah, basically the way we looked at. So
that's awesome. You know the. A couple of things I pick it up from that story, right? I mean, there's the you know, just make it work any way that it can kind of attitude, like, which is sure. Which is fantastic. I when you were talking about the drum circle, I was thinking about Woodstock, New York has this badass drum circle they do like every day, I think, in the summertime. And it's something like it's the same idea where it's just like 50 people, 60 people in this crazy circle hitting anything they can, you know?
Controlling chaos.
Yeah. But I mean, like that idea that there isn't like a rule, like you're not a drummer unless you play with your hi-hats over here and your snare in the middle. And that isn't a real rule, you know? And lots of bands, you know, whether it's the White Stripes that just have, you know, the drums and guitar, or you get like, and there's this band called Treat Her Right that nobody ever heard of, but I used to like them. They're the guy from Morphine. He had a band called Treat Her Right first. Morphine was kind of a big 90s, you know, weird band. Uh-huh. Anyway, so like they had like their instruments were cocktail drum, low guitar and like, you know, harmonica, you know, and they were like this weird, like kind of, they were from like Harvard, but they were like this bluesy rock band. It was cool. But I mean, the same idea, you know, it's just like, I don't know if it was out of necessity, like in this case, or this out of preference, but they just played weird ass drums and shit and said, screw you, we're a band. You know, this is what we do. Yeah.
Well, I think that's at the heart of art, right? Is I think obviously we were young at the time and we didn't know, we were just kids growing up trying, you know, Kilo and me were just trying to find who we were and express. You know what I mean? Express all the
just be right.
Whatever the frick we had inside, you know. Yeah. And so I think as an artist, you realize that it's very freeform, and you come into it however that is for the artist and the individual. I think that was probably the draw for us.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. You know, and that's probably the draw for most artists is you know, I think that's where that's why the coasts are, you know, it's beautiful and it's also very out there in the same. Mm-hmm. space, because all the people in the Midwest who are a little bit off norm, you know, a little bit off, just off center, are like, this is boring. Like, I'm going to go where there's people that are like marching to the beat of their own drum. You know?
Pun intended, right?
Yeah.
That's awesome. You know, well, the other thing I pulled away from that I picked up from just the story of you guys being kids, you know, Kilo at the beginning was sort of basically Joel trying to ask you, like, why were you be like cool with me and why were you like just and you were like I don't know, I'm just, it's just the way it was. And then that's the reason I'm pointing that out, right, is that it's like asking, if you ask a, like, why were you cool, you know, why are you a good person, and a good person is gonna be like, what are you talking about, I'm just being me, you know, because it doesn't dawn on normal human beings, good human beings, decent human beings, to be assholes, you know what I mean? You don't just by default like, I just hate people.
Stop
me. So anyway, I just thought, so basically I'm saying, you're a good guy, Joel. That's what I'm saying. You know, good people just assume it's good to be good, you know?
I know the answer to my own question, actually, sir. I agree with what you're saying, Bob, but I do think there's always underlying reasons why we act the way we do and why we're accepting of certain things, just depending on how we were raised or what we've been around. And since Joel was when he was a kid, traveled all over the world with this group called
Staying, with exactly what I was going to say.
Fuck off. I can be your mouth. Don't worry.
Yeah, that was odd. Yeah. Don't worry
about it. But because he traveled around with this group called Toy Maker's Dream, with his parents and his dad played the devil and shit. I think he got a very like cultural
a worldly view
groundingness. Like for instance, he said the thing about the drum circle being why he could help me with drums, which I didn't know that part of that story. But it's like, if you're used to being in a fucking van or truck or whatever you guys rode around in and doing random shit and having to fix something when it broke and having to just, you know, kind of figure anything out, then it's not a big deal to try to figure it out. And that's just my opinion, but you've also told me that. So,
yeah.
Was that what you were going to say?
Yeah, I was just going to throw a plug into my, you know, my parents. I was very fortunate to have extremely loving and accepting parents. My dad's a pastor and he's extremely non-judgmental. And, you know, like most kids that stray from whatever and end up in.
Don't point fingers at my face.
Sex, drugs, and rock and roll, or whatever you want to call it. You know, a lot of times have a really difficult time, obviously, with their parents. And while I did have a difficult time with my parents, I never felt anything but, you know, love and guidance from my folks. And so I think, for sure, that was.
Yeah,
we were both fortunate to have very loving, you know, very loving folks.
Yep. Yeah, we talk about my parents on this show all the time.
Yeah.
So fucking the parents, not a big deal.
Yeah.
I did remember I remember this vividly, spending the night at his house for the very first time. It's the first time I'd ever spent the night at anyone's house. Then I got upset and cried and wanted to go home. So at like 2 in the morning, my parents had to drive all the way across town. Yep. Because I was over it. Game over. I literally, this is not for me.
Yep.
I'm out, bro. So.
And they did. They didn't say, suck it up. Go to sleep. You know what I mean? Right. We'll see you in the morning. Whatever. Don't be a baby. You know, they said, okay, buddy.
You probably should have. He was 17.
No. Were you 21 by now, bro?
That's great.
So, no, but I agree. Yeah, your parents are dope. And they've always been very kind to me, never judgmental to me. Joel's dad's Bible school that I don't think they have anymore was where I went to Bible school, me went to Bible school. No one's going to believe this. They're like, now I know it's full of shit. But I did. It was called, what was it called? Fuck. It was called.
Not that.
No. something about.
Fuck Bible school.
It was called Transit. And we like lived in this church, like on the bad side of town, which that sounds safe. because God will protect us. But yeah, no, I really value that experience in my life. I met a lot of good people there and saw a lot of good people do things. And I also feel like I met a demon, but that's just not. There was one moment where it just felt not okay. And I was like, I'm out. I'm leaving. I'm crying, calling my parents at 2 in the morning. I'm going home. So, you know, I guess I carried that through to my college days.
There you go.
So, yeah. So I've been like tied up with his parents my whole life as well. So shout out Donna and Roger. We love you. Yeah.
What?
Thank you for everything you did for us.
Well, that's awesome. So, so I guess, you know, so as far as the timeline goes then, right? Because we kind of talked about when you guys met, you were really little. And you got older, you were like, you're getting into high school and stuff when you were playing drums, right, Kilo? So, and then are you guys the same age? Or are you older, Joe?
Yeah, we are. Is
it a year apart?
No, bro. It's 9 days apart something. When's your birthday?
July 14th.
Yeah, 9 days.
But how old are you?
How old are you?
I'm 32.
I am too.
9 days. Well, that was okay. It's a little confusing because I was a year, my parents did the year ahead. His parents did the like, just stay in this, whatever, because we have late July.
That also was partially why I did not enjoy myself half the time as a child, because I always wanted to be like, because at this wonderful, wonderful school that I love so much, they separated from like fifth grade and sixth grade, and then upstairs from seventh grade to 12th grade. So once Joel and me both went there, I was downstairs and he was upstairs, and it was just like this weird thing where it was. And
quick little blurb though, he had the dopest tank like scooter, and we would any chance we could pour water on the ground. and do donuts and it hold on to the back.
I took
hold on to the back. It just like it looked like you ever just like a YouTube video of a guy on a on a crane or like a what do you call those things? Like a forklift or something. Yeah, it's right, spinning around. There's a guy holding on a rope.
It was like that. But eventually we had broken the motor on one side enough that randomly it would shut off but the other side would keep going, right? Mm. So I'd be going like 6 miles an hour down the hall and one side would stop. So I would just eat the wall, the whole, there were holes in that poor.
They had a lot of drywall.
That's why I won't talk shit about that school because I fucked it up real good. I mean, like that wheelchair took out a few full toilets. Like the whole toilet is gone after the mayhem. So, you know, they deserve.
It was a good time.
It was good.
Where did that come from again? What were we talking about?
He did it this time. Yes, I always do that. Everyone knows that I'm talking and then I say, why did I say that?
It's a timeline thing. It's a timeline.
Well,
I don't know if we did. I guess we got the timeline. I mean, I think that... because the reason it's confused, we kind of jumped around a little bit. We started with you guys as adults, then went back to when you were kids, and then now the gaps we'd fill in are actually already filled in. We did them earlier.
Cool.
I don't remember how many years was I in LA before you came out. Not a lot. A couple, like two.
Moved here.
I moved in 2013.
2 years.
So I've been out here for 2 years.
Right,
I'm going to jump ahead to you to when he said I didn't think he could be a producer.
There you go. That's where we should be, I think.
Well, I'm just going to say why I said it.
When you said it.
Oh, I don't remember when.
Yeah, what was the context?
It was big for you, obviously.
Well, no, it was I don't know if we've talked about it on this show, but I've talked about it in other interviews, kind of when I became a producer with when like my life went to shit town. It was full fuck fest. So I'm living with my ex-girlfriend and my dog at the time, like had broken out and like tried to find me an attacked dog. So then he had to go live in New Hampshire. Right. And then my black van, my nice black van, like I hadn't turned it off all the way. So I thought it like it died. So I basically like junked it at my parents' house. So I didn't have a vehicle. I didn't have a relationship.
You said black van, right?
Yeah.
Okay, black van. I thought you said black man.
No. I did not wear out my black van.
Okay. All right. Okay, then. Anyway.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Come on, man.
I'm sorry. I was like, what's he saying?
Okay.
Sorry.
Anyway, so I was like pretty down and I was trying to do the live coaching thing and everything did shit. However, I was in a towel. I just got out of the shower and Joel came over like during lunch or something. And we were watching like videos on YouTube and he showed me Tomorrowland. Vividly fucking remember this. And we're watching it. I did not like EDM music at all. I didn't like anything. I was like, this is the terriblest music. But then I saw like this cripple guy in the stands, right? Like getting lifted above the crowd in this huge crowd. And I said out loud to Joel, I was like, I want to do that. Like, I want to make that music. I want to do that. You care to fill in the part of what?
I just said I was just cautioning him. You know, I said I wasn't trying to I wasn't trying to put him down, but I would say at this point in my mind in our lives, we were adults now. Mm-hmm. We were no longer children,
right.
And I was out in LA working really shitty long hours. You mm-hmm. know, on film. You know, with all my don't see my family on the days that I'm working almost. It's like, you know, usually minimum 13 hour days. That's pretty normal, you know, and then usually longer. Right. So for me, I was like, wow, this has been really tough. And while I was like, dude, I don't know. The learning curve is super steep. A lot of my friends are, you know, starving artists, blah, 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 blah. Like, and he was still in Oklahoma. So like for both of us that, you know, Oklahoma is kind of like a safe bubble sort of thing.
Right. While
exactly. And it's easy to survive and it's easy to live there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it's hard to move away from being a big fish in a small pond.
Sure.
And so, you know, that was my thing is I was just kind of like, obviously I knew he could do whatever he set his mind to because of the things he'd accomplished. But right. I will say that at like drumming and bands and doing that kind of thing, it's much more free form, right? It's a lot of like The discipline factor is there, but you can also still just wild out and like, you know, get drunk and miss a show or like, right. you know what I'm saying? Like that's yeah. part and parcel to sort of that scene.
Yeah.
And so for me, I was like, man, I didn't want to see him come out here and get eaten up. Obviously, like yeah. he was my boy. So I was like, the learning curve is steep.
That's exactly
you're going to have to sit and we sucked at school. Right. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. and he was thinking about, you know, whatever, all these different things. Like, dude, the learning curve is steep. We suck at school. Like, I just want to make sure that, you know, I don't want you
this
to.
Is not what he said, though, because I'm.
Those are my thoughts.
Those are I see.
That I'm learning now.
Those are your good intentions that yeah. paved the way to hell.
Yeah. And you know, that ended up being a good motivator.
No, I credit him for that. There like, I think I talked about in our last episode with Nick, like, it made me more motivated to go, fuck you, I'll do it anyway. It's like type of thing where it was like, even in the hard moments, even that I have now, because as a producer, you're always learning. You're never not learning. There's never going to be the final DAW to rule all the DAWs. You know, right. like we're always going to be learning new things. Every day I learn a new technique. And it's like, yeah, I mean, he kind of placed in my head like, fuck it, like he thinks I can't do it or the learning curve might be too high for me, but I can fake it until I make it. Like we've talked about, I can right. put myself in the mindset of what I think a real producer would do in this scenario and that scenario mm-hmm. and live it out to the best of my knowledge. And even if I'm not, didn't do it correctly, it was like, to me, I was a producer. So I started picking up better and better habits to where, and I think in Joel's defense, I had picked up things, got good at them, and never done them again. Right. Type of thing back then. Mm-hmm. Like I'd get good at something and be like, oh, cool, I can do that. Okay, next.
Yeah, right. So, yeah.
Obviously, yeah. for something like this, where it's like you have to learn constantly every day, mm-hmm. you can't have that mentality.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
And I think that's what he meant because what he said to my face was, you can't do that because the learning curve is too high. So it wasn't.
I mean,
it wasn't. That's like
not.
It
was trail of a sentence afterwards.
It wasn't like, oh, you're dumb. It was like it would be right. hard.
It wasn't fun. Cruel. I mean, it could have been right. phrased better, but you know.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
Well, yeah. But I mean, that is, you know, that is when you were talking. What was I? Now I did it, Kilo.
Yay!
I was thinking of something. I was thinking of something when you were talking. I was like, oh, yeah, what he just said. And now I'm like, hey. Anyway, well,
welcome to my brain.
Well, yeah, right. I think I was just going to talk about how you were getting into lo-fi now. I think because you mentioned like, oh, I learn new things every day. And I was like, well, yeah, you know, we're making lo-fi music.
I'm trying, but I think all of the people in this room right now can attest to the fact that I'm not succeeding in making that sound at all. I've made this weird other sound that's just like we talked with Nick about how my music comes from me not being able to make a traditional song. Right. I really did try to make lo-fi for like a whole week or two, like really intently. And it came out with this weird thing that you guys are here on my remix album. That's coming out last year. Kilo-fi, whatever. That's what we actually call it.
Yeah, that's
what I'm calling that. Yeah. So, yeah, no, but I mean, that's what me and Joel and Bob were talking about. It's like the learning curve. It's like there's always something you can learn. And I didn't even learn how to do it right, but me doing that has made it to where this remix album has big EDM bangers on it, but they have this weird texture to them mm-hmm. that comes from me experimenting with a completely different genre than I've ever touched.
Right.
So it's like we always have that in the back of our mind of like, maybe I could do it this way. Maybe like my last song that came out, the hard style sound you hear in the drop is a vocoder that's going from the lead and linking to the 808 and back into the vocoder in the lead. So it's making this like weird bass tone. So
cool.
If I did not use marijuanas, I would never come up with that idea because I was just pushing things and going, oh, and then I was like, oh my God. Oh, yeah.
Well, you know what, Kilo, that leads to what, you know, we usually talk to our guests about inspiration, what inspires them, whether it's their external influences, drugs, alcohol, love, sex, whatever it is, or just internal influences, like, you know, your own thought spinning. So we usually talk about some version of that. And Kilo and I were mentioning that before. And he said you had an interesting take on this, like what inspiration was or if it was. And so, you know, what do you, as far as what inspires an artist or any artist or yourself?
Yeah, I think before I had kids, it was sort of just, it was always about, you know, self-discovery and truth, right? I mean, there's a lot of stuff in, because I'm in film, and so there's a lot of like script writing and just different things of developing a story. It's a story is king, right? It's always, if something is visually beautiful, like it can only hold interest for so long, right? But if there's no story, right. Right. Eventually it'll kind of fall off. And so I think, you know, the pursuit of truth, and that's so huge. It's like you can always tell, you can always, even if it's not your jam, if it's not your bag, right, you can always appreciate whatever someone else has done if they did that to 100% of the exploration of their truth. And so right.
They're being genuine in their intent to create this thing that they
100%,
really,
yeah, this is their 100%
thing. Right.
And I think after I had kids, everything shifted a little bit, because then I started getting into more like, wow, I also just need to provide, you know, and I don't know. We were having an interesting conversation the other night just about
which one?
The one about like being the emotional aspect of it, you know. And for me, I have some artist friends that are, of course, still, you know, all artists are a little bit maybe more, I would say, emotional than the average person. Human or whatever, just on like on a scale, but some are able to internalize it more to and I think we talked about there's a disciplinary aspect there,
right,
to it as well. And you know, obviously, of course, you can be the, you know, it's one in a million if you're just like if you're a savant and like every feeling you feel, right, you act on it,
right.
Yeah, and it happens to wind itself up, and you don't.
Maybe, white stripes, you know.
Sure, yeah, but you know, but for every one of those, there's a zillion that just end up addicted to heroin or something, right. And sure. They're like, yeah, killing themselves or something, you know. I mean, and that's tragic. And yeah, there's, I think that there's a good balance of people that are making it, that have a good a healthy relationship with their emotional like there's a lot of emotional intelligence there. There's a discipline there to like, it's grind time, it's explore time. How do I marry those two together?
Right. It's really interesting because this is this is almost mirroring a conversation we had with our first guest, Malachi, who's a producer. And I don't know if you know him, Joel, maybe you do, but he's a friend of Kilo's. Right. Yeah. Anyway, he's a producer. He's a friend of Kilo's. Real cool, talented dude.
Super dumb guy.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, and we were having a conversation just like this. And basically, the way he was saying it was basically we were talking about musicians, right? So he's like, as a musician, he was a sax player and a bunch of other things too. So he knew what he was talking about as far as chops and playing. Mm-hmm. And he was saying, like, he's like, you know, you're an artist, and that is just, as you're saying, your emotions just pouring out. You know, that's the part of you that's, you know, smokes weed, meditates in the field, and like kind of like freeform writes poetry. Right. And you go, what was that I just did? You know, that's the artist. You know, but then there's the technician that you have to be both. And the technician, right, you know, knows how to take that crazy ass stoned poetry, make it into stanzas, write it to, you know, like to write a chord change behind it, make a melody up, you know? So, and so that's kind of what you're saying, is that you kind of have to understand that balance and maintain that balance if you want to be, you know, a functioning human being artist in the world.
Right. Right. Yeah. And you can't forget that you are a human being first. That's one thing I try to emphasize to every artist I come in contact with. Like, you're a person first. And if you don't take care of that, such as you end up with, I don't know, necrotizing pneumonia, you know, you are no longer a productive artist, right? Whatever you're inputting is what you're exporting. I don't know. Whatever it comes in goes out. And so it's like, you first have to take a moment and realize you're a human being. You need to take care of your health. Mm-hmm. You need to take care of your mental health. You take care of your friendships. You can't just put everything on the back burner and go, I'm going to be productive. Because I've done it. I've burned relationships. I've burned up my own body, like to achieve things. But you don't start achieving until the things that are inside of you are something that you truly can show to people. Mm-hmm. Right? I don't know. or I'm just crazy.
No, I think you just said some really smart stuff, actually. That's what I think. Yeah. So, and you know, and that's a, you know, we talk about this stuff a lot, you know, with our histories. And Joel, you don't know me from Adam, so you don't know what my history is. But anyway, I'm, you know, but I'm from New York. I've been playing in bands my entire life. I worked in the music business, like with record labels for a while. Then I worked in corporate America for a while. Now I have a music blog that, you know, and now I'm doing this, and I make music. I have a little record deal, and, you know, put some songs out, and hopefully someday somebody will, you know, make me their theme song on their sitcom or something. But anyway, but that's my background. So my point though is that, you know, in that real brief synopsis was, you know, years of heavy drinking and smoke and just not taking care of myself, you know, and the reality is that, you know, I mean, there's a reason that I'm, and, you know, a teetotaling vegan now, you know what I'm saying? Like something right, led to that, you know, but,
sure.
But anyway, the point is that tequila's point of what you know, put in and what you put out, not necessarily meaning food, drink and stuff, but just like your life that you're living going into you, into your mind and coming back out through your art. It's true, man. You have a better life. Because you always romanticize. I was a rocker. So I romanticized that, like living hard, made authentic rock and roll. And that was like real deal shit, you know? And sure, that's where a lot of like the Ramones and shit, I mean, those guys were living hard, but you know, the ones that are still alive, like Iggy Pop, like if now. Right, exactly. If Iggy Pop hadn't stopped cutting himself on stage and shooting up heroin, he'd be dead. You know what I mean? He's clean now. And he's, if you actually read probably what he's got in his notebook, it's probably the best poetry he's ever written. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And because he's putting better things in now, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, don't you all agree, including our fan watching this can comment on this, like you have to have lived somewhat of that lifestyle sometimes to get the inspiration on the other end. You might never make it to the other end. So everyone watching, I'm not saying go out and shoot up heroin tonight.
No.
Or tomorrow night. But I'm saying that I know that my experiences with my drug addictions that I've had that I got over long ago and, you know, did make my mind work a certain way, right? It did also help to portray the I can do whatever I want attitude that I have in my brain, because if you can get yourself off of opiates and benzos, like without anybody helping you do it,
right,
you're pretty sure you can learn or do whatever you want. So I did.
You know what I would say?
Don't shame yourself if you are in that place in your life right now, or if you've been there, because it can lead to you writing some dope ass shit on the other end of this journey that you're on right now.
Right.
Well,
I was just going to say, the only thing I wanted to point out was that, you know, the fact that the key there is that it can lead to productive. Not just that, but also that's, you know, it's sort of, and I'm talking about myself here, not, you know, and as much as anybody, but it's like the dumbest path to the right outcome. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you don't have to be an alcoholic for 20 years to learn the lessons that I learned being an alcoholic for 20 years. You could do it a lot better. Go to therapy for a couple of years and read some books. You'll probably be better off, you know? So that's all. I just wanted to point that out. So.
I feel like the human condition, right? I mean, if you're a creative, I mean, I definitely have known people that have created their own, you know, self-destructive tendencies just to experience stuff
Hunter S. Thompsons of the world, right?
Exactly. Yeah. But, you know, I think the human condition is we all go through our own stuff, right? In different levels of severity. I have some friends that are not EDM, not, you know, that are musicians that write like beautiful, amazing, like my friend Jake Scott, right? Like he writes amazing. He's a phenomenal musician. And a lot of his, like, not all of his songs, but he writes songs about like his wife and stuff, like, you know what I mean? And he's like extremely, you know, his fan base is huge, and he writes just lyrically and musically. He's so talented. And, you know, he didn't come from like this hardened, you know, like rock and roll past, you know? Right. So I think But he's had his own. Because it goes back to truth.
Right.
There you go.
And that is being authentic. And I think that
if I tried to write love songs, you guys would never listen to my music. Let's just be honest with ourselves. I write terror trap music. I literally made up that genre. I didn't coin the term, but my music is what made that genre a thing. So do you think someone with that mind should be anywhere near like a love song? Like, I've done Christmas songs. Did a Christmas cover.
That Halo was All the Bells.
But it also like says naughty words in it and shit. So like
naughty words and shit.
But it's like, I think what's good about us, all of the people we've interviewed and us three as artists and stuff, is we know our truth, like Joel was talking, and we know like what it boils down to for us. So we can, for instance, we've talked about this on every episode. Me and Joel talk about this all the time. Like me tapping into my friend dying recently, right? Like if I was trying to make like a love song about that, which I'm not making sad music because of it, but I'm being true to myself. So I'm using that energy behind what I've been doing recently. And, you know, I mean, it's working, even though if you hear it, you'll never go, that's based on your friend dying, right? You never have thought that. You would never have thought that. But it's like, that's where it came from. And that was me being true to what my insides felt like. And now you guys get to see what my insides feel like. Not always pretty and sunny, but, you know, so yeah. I mean, that's my little take on that idea.
Right on, man. Right on. Right, you know, and it reminds me, you know, I have always, Kilo and I talk about this all the time, right? But this notion of like having like a specific thing that inspires you, like Kilo does this a lot when he writes. He's got, you know, he'll have a theme or even like a focus on something that he's been thinking about and makes music based on it. And I always start like, I'm a complete opposite. I don't, I have no motivation whatsoever. I literally just sit down at a piano or pick up a guitar and just start, blah, 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 you know what I mean? And lots of times I'll just mutter words that will ultimately become lyrics, and they'll mean something ultimately, you know what I mean? Because there was something going on in my head, but I had no intention. I just kind of let it, you know, I was the cross-legged in the field writing poetry, I guess. That's
correct me if I'm wrong, Bob, but I think you're your own inspiration. So you write these riffs, you sit there and blah, 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 like you said, and that riff becomes the inspiration for the rest of the song. So I think it's a misnomer to say to someone that you don't get it from inspiration, because you create your own inspiration.
Yeah, I guess, like I'm inspired by my own improvisation, I guess I would say. You know, like I make a riff up and then you're right. And I will build a whole song based on the one. I'll play for 10 minutes. It's really how I do it. I'll play for 10 minutes, some instrument, and there'll be one little spark, like a minute that's really cool. And I'll be like, oh, hey, what'd I do there? You know, and then build that from there. That's kind of.
Yeah.
So anyway, so what about no intent ahead of time is all.
Right. Yeah. Definitely. What helps you create? What inspires you to create?
I think I just have to be aware of where I'm at in the headspace. You know, it's hardest for me to create when I'm tired, you know, when I'm tired and stressed about that. I mean, I know that there's a weird part about
being tired.
Yeah. There's a weird part about like staying. Once you cross that threshold, the problem is I have kids and they wake up early. So if I'm not, or I've got to go work in film. And so I got to wake up early, and it's also a physically demanding job. So I literally will get sick if I run myself ragged on sleep. Right. So there's a weird balance that I have to, because I work in this, I haven't really said this yet, but I do lighting, camera platform stuff like techno crane operating, different things like that, remote head.
He directed and filmed my video, which this is now the plug for the video that will be premiering after this episode airs.
Yes.
At the end of this episode, you guys get to see my new music video for the song Travelers that I did with a dubstep artist. He's the brilliant mind behind all of the directing. Maybe I came up with a few of the creepiness because that's me, obviously, but dude, this shit was, dude, in the middle of the desert, shot so legit. So
we had fun.
Wait until the end, or fast forward till the end, and you can see that. But yeah, so he does stuff like that too. He's not just like a dude that like is strong and does stuff like that,
right? I have my own production company. I do direct produce as well. the writing process for me is pretty slow. I enjoy partnering with people that are, I would say, more proficient writers, but they also enjoy it more. So it's also a lack of craft. And that's one thing that we were talking about is the ROI for me wasn't necessarily there to be like, okay, I'm going to like learn to, you know, write and be a, you know, I'm not going to go to like college for writing or something like that, but I still will. I'm going to write all this stuff out and then I'm going to go work with somebody that's their jam. Right. So,
Like me mastering his songs, like he didn't
learn,
like want to go to school to learn how to mix and master like me. But then he found someone like me that can make it sound the way he wants it to.
So, right.
Yeah.
Right.
That's amazing. He's a less of a musician for five. It takes a certain kind of personality to be humble enough to go, I am shit at this. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to pass this over to people who are not shit at this.
Right. Right.
You know?
So, although I don't recall ever saying I was shit at mastering. No,
I'm not. My own life.
I'm just kidding.
No, it really does go off of my brain going, this has been a thing I've done in the past, having people write guitar riffs or something for my music where it's like, I cannot do that and I'm not going to try.
Mm-hmm, right.
But I'm smart enough to know my limitations, which obviously I've had a lot in my life. But like, I know my limitations. So I go, okay, I'm going to do what I can do and then I'm going to pass this off someone who is a professional at that. So I think that's what
And,
right? I agree, Kilo. I was making a joke there, but you're absolutely right. I mean, that is the thing. Like, I don't even consider like mastering my stuff at all anymore. You know what I mean? Why would I bother doing that? You were far better at it than I am. So, I mean, you're right. Yeah. You're exactly right. So anyway,
I think a lot of times it's circumstantial, right? Sure. If someone's not there, you're in the middle of a process of something and you just got to grind through, right? You know, it's like, if you were like, oh, I want to hear what this sounds like, you're not like, I'm not going to do it until I find someone that's good.
Right,
you know, I've seen you power through. That's what we all do as creatives. But I think, anyways, all that to say, I don't really know the creative process for me, inspiration, yada, yada, yada. I think it really is dependent on where I'm at, you know, with the work cycle.
Right.
So I recently moved back to Oklahoma. After being in LA for about 8 years. I'm in a weird position of transition right now. I like working in film here 1 or 2 weeks out of every month. And, you know, there's a big surge in film happening right now in Oklahoma. There's a lot of sound stages being built and things like that. So I want to be there to help grow that infrastructure.
Right.
And, you know, I think the choice to move for me was largely based on children and family and stuff. It is a much, LA is a transient place. Like, you kind of laugh, like, no one from LA is from LA.
Right.
But, you know, when you meet someone that's like born and raised here, you're, it's a unicorn.
It's a fucking unicorn.
Exactly. You know, so when you have kids, it's just like you're a fish out of water, which is no slight to, you know, these people, but usually it's always career first and then, then children. So, you know, being early 30s with two kids, you know, I don't have gray hair yet. And then signing up for AARP, you know what I mean? Like, that's like most other parents you meet out here, which is freaking awesome. But I think the Midwest for us just made sense to move back. And I'm at a place in my career where I can sort of branch out into both, both fields. And it's nice. Like, my kids want to be around my grandparents and my brother and my sister are still there.
Right.
My brother has special needs. And so he's still back there. So I can, you know, hang out with my brother and stuff like that, which is awesome.
That's awesome.
It's weird. I don't really have a specific inspiration thing at this point. It's really just,
sure, but what we want to know what you've been up to, what you're.
Oh yeah,
Getting
Kilo's music video out. There's another music video that's been in the works for a long time, running through some red tape. That's I don't know what you call it, sort of a remix by a good friend of mine, Josh Cumbie. Super phenomenal. He does EDM, like some pop and stuff like that. He works with DJ. Or what is it? Armin van Buuren and crazy guys like that.
That's cool.
Got a kind of a script that's being worked on. I have a pilot for a series that I'm running through some later drafts on that I would love to shoot that back actually in the Midwest, because the setting is perfect and it's sort of loosely based off of my family, which is a hoot.
Right on.
Cool.
To say the least. So, I mean, there's
thrown in your face.
Yes. Yes. You know, I think for any artist, right, you're always juggling a lot of plates.
Right.
You know, you've got some things where you're, for me, I'm in the film union in the lighting department because that supplies my insurance and stuff like that. And it's also, it keeps me around, you know, directors and, you know, worked on this latest Spider-Man movie coming up and the Obi-Wan Star Wars series. And, you know, just a bunch of just, you know, if you've seen it on TV, if it's coming out, it's probably like, oh yeah, I worked on that for, you know, whatever.
Right.
I know that so-and-so. Well,
yeah. Somebody, people, folks should know, like go to imdb.com and check out Joel Nix. It's NIX because he does have, it's a fun resume to read. There's a lot of cool stuff in there. You just worked on the Will Smith movie. I saw it was one of the things. Did you get to meet Will Smith?
We didn't chat it up, but he was there. He was great. You know, how I work in that department is interesting. I do what's called like sort of day playing. So I'll come in for like, just because I have relationships with the crews. Mm-hmm. So I'll come in when they have double up days or they need more guys. They need a dolly grip, they need a techno crane, all those different things. And so it makes me able to have a free schedule.
Techno cranes. It's my new banger, bro. Okay, sorry.
We've
made a song called Techno Cranes. It's
fantastic.
I mean, look at it this way, right? The typical schedule on film is Monday to Friday. You start off with like a 5 a.m. call time. And then usually you work into what we call Fratterdays, which you're in the splits by Friday. And so you're at 2 or 3 p.m. call time.
Right.
And then you got to start all back over again. And you're working, you know, 80 plus hour weeks. For me, when I day play, I can pick and choose. I can work on more shows, you know, network with more crews, get around more directors, producers, people like that, and kind of work on those relationships, which is just more appealing to me. Right. And because I have a family, I can take days off if I want. I'm like, I don't want to work next week. That's cool. I'll just take the week off and then I'll make some calls when I want to jump back in on a show.
Right. Well, so I've heard you talk, we've talked about like, you know, the balance thing in being an artist where you have to balance the knowledge of your craft between your inspiration and crazy artist nature that we've talked about and stuff like that. So our listeners have a kind of a vibe of how to do that. But what would you say is something that in your personal experience of being an artist keeps you inspired in those very shitty moments where you're like, my life just shit on the bed and then burn the bed. What do you do in that moment? What advice do you have for these blossoming artists that are watching this, for those moments where they're watching it and they're like, fuck this, I don't want to be an artist. Joel's saying it takes this many hours a week and Kilo's saying he has to learn something every day. I don't want to fucking do this. I'm already struggling. Like, what would you tell those people?
Well, just quit. Cherish it while you still can.
Go to business school.
Yeah. Be an engineer or a doctor.
Go be a doctor. Oh, God. Always did them.
I hate to reference TikTok, but there's a great little Joe Rogan.
Follow us all on TikTok, by the way.
Don't follow me. My TikTok is not. Follow these guys.
Some fun stuff of us recording music, us having a little behind the scenes with our artists. So
yes.
Anyways, continue plugging the TikTok. I don't know the handle.
There's a great clip.
It'll be on the screen right below one of our
pictures. And you're just Kilo House, right?
No, we're talking all.
Oh, yeah.
Follow mine. Mine is me being a dumbass.
Some of these things are still in development.
So there's a great little clip. I think it's from the Joe Rogan show. I'm not sure, but it's actually Mike Tyson, and they're talking of Mike Tyson basically saying you're nothing without discipline. He said discipline is doing what you hate and acting like you love it.
Oh yeah,
right. And I think that's huge. Sure. There's a book called The Artist Way. It's more so for.
Oh, Nick talked about this.
It's a phenomenal book.
Literally, like. 3 minutes ago,
I'm
watching these.
I forget who.
Did
he say? Did he plug it?
Some lady.
It's a lady. She's phenomenal. It's a great book. It's more so geared for like writing and things like that. But I think anytime, just like you guys have, you know, tools that you guys use, you've got your tool bag for stuff that you can pull out when you need it. It's the same way she talks about, how does she phrase it? Like nurturing essentially your inner child, or protecting your creative child, taking yourself out. She calls them like artist dates.
Oh, basically. Yeah, I do that.
That
totally works, guys.
It works.
If you need a break, because it's like you appreciating yourself as if you were going out with someone that you thought was really attractive. How you would treat them is how you end up treating yourself. Mm-hmm. So you don't take people with you. You go to like a movie by yourself and you really want to see it. It's amazing.
Whatever you like to do.
Nick is the one who taught our last artist on here, our last interview. He's the one who taught me to do that. So,
she's got a whole bunch of different things. And I think it's really about like whether you take it from that or talking to different individuals. Sure. And I think that's part of the beauty of relationships is what works for you? Hey, I'm having a hard time with this. Like, have you, you know, how have you circumvented that wall or whatever, you know? And so I think as long as you have an arsenal that you can pull from, when you come to that impasse, you can pull that out and you know, you have to be self-aware.
Know what your toolbox is ahead of time. So you know what to go to when you need it.
Yes. You know? And they're going to be different things for different, you know, different times. If you're lonely, maybe the going to a movie alone isn't the thing, but I do go to movies alone. If my I don't know what you would call it, like being around people tank is full, you know, because I'm kind of 50-50 on the introvert extrovert scale. I'm kind of right in the middle.
Right.
That's also something that I would highly recommend. If you haven't taken any kind of personality test or figured out but you probably know yourself. If you are someone watching this and you go, I don't know why I'm like this. I can't figure out.
Absolutely.
This social norm or whatever, just go take a personality test, because it's going to tell you how you are as an introvert or extrovert. If you are recharged from being around people or if it drains you being around people, knowing those things helps your emotional intelligence, helps you be more self-aware. And I think that it also allows you to accept who you are as a creative and as an individual.
Yeah, I think I agree with Joel completely. What I think is really something you need to focus on when you do these exercises, everybody that's watching, like what you want to do is you want to find who you are for yourself rather than putting the judgment on it of I should be like this person. Like, yes, I've told you in my experience, I pretended I was a producer and like kind of weasel my way in with that mindset, but you have to keep in mind those were my own points of view of what a producer was like. I wasn't Googling what does a producer eat, what does a producer think. So it was still me being true to me. So when you're doing these exercises, don't look at your friend and be like, man, I wish I was an extrovert like Amy or whoever your friend is.
Screw Amy.
Right.
Should probably I think we're past an hour at this point, so we probably should bring it around to
I think to wrap it up, I think what Joel, the main point and thing that I've learned, which we always learn things from the people we interview in here, what I've learned from Joel is like it's very, very crucial for you to get like some of your like knowing what you're doing down, so that because for me, and when he was saying this, I was thinking of my own life where it's like when you have a negative emotion, especially a negative thing or even an exciting thing inside, if you don't know how to execute it, your emotions will get in the way. You will not have enough brain power to put that emotion on the page, and then that's wasted. But like Joel's been talking about, you've been talking about, I've been talking about, if you know what you're doing to some degree, I'm not saying go to fucking school for it, everybody, but like if you at least know your craft enough, when you feel those craziness, like the I'm in love emotion is a really crazy one, or like to me, or you know, the like, oh, life sucks emotion, you will be able to put that into other people because you will be able to like portray that without effort. Right. I don't know. Maybe remember, I'm just your host of the show that you're watching. Like, I am not like the music god or the artist god. So take what I'm saying and go, maybe I like it, try it out. And if it doesn't work for you, say, go fuck you, Kilo. But don't use it.
And figure out
just
what does.
Just throw it out the window and use what works for you. But know there will always be something that works for you as you, an individual.
Yeah. Right on, man.
There we go. There you go. Sorry. I kind of cut it.
Well said, my friend.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. We are now at my most favorite.
Oh yeah. So what we do? Well, first we usually ask: is there any? We normally would say: is there anything else you'd want to talk about, Joel? I mean, did we miss anything that you wanted to say today?
Or what? Like,
I don't think so.
I mean, the floor is yours right now. Like, what is something that we're saying? You can say anything you want to the people watching this right now. It doesn't have to be inspirational. It doesn't even have to make sense. What is something you just want to share? The floor is yours. Share whatever you feel like sharing with people.
Just be happy to be here.
There you go. That's
HTBH all day.
Be happy to be in my apartment.
All right. So that was perfect. And now what we do is, this will be a random question. So what we do is we'll each ask a question. I'll ask you a question. And one of us will ask just a general personal question. The other one will ask something, you know, industry related, right? And then each of us has to answer the question too. So
we go kind of in a circle. Don't bait the question, sir, Joel, sir. Don't bait them. You got to be able to answer your own baited question.
There you go. Okay. Yeah, right. Okay. All right. Okay. I think I've got the industry one or the art, you know, whatever, entertainment one, right? Yeah, I'll go first. So Joel, what is being that you work in the film industry? I thought this would be a good one, and we're all big film buffs. What is your favorite cult movie, cult classic? So for the listeners that don't know what I'm talking about, I mean a movie that's not or was never popular in the mainstream, but has a devoted following of some subculture of the population.
That's a hard question, bro.
Your favorite cult movie.
You know,
how am I going to know what
it is? I'm just going to be childish and probably just
Beavis and Butthead.
I'm just going to say probably Napoleon Dynamite because
excellent.
Because it really didn't do well in the box. I mean, I know that's like a silly thing, but like I could sit here for forever and be like, well, I don't know about because.
Yeah.
Napoleon Dynamite still holds up. It did not do well when it came out. Yep. And it's still
freaking hilarious. One of the greatest movies. Yeah. God.
I love it. I guess if that's the stipulations, I think in this generation, no one would agree with me, but I think originally when Texas Chainsaw Massacre came out,
that's a perfect answer.
Fucking flawed because like they signed a contract with the distribution people that ran with like mafia led and stuff. So they didn't get any money from that. That's and awesome. It was all like, so it was all shit, right? Or it's either that or the Evil Dead. It's really very hard toss up for me. I'll give the reasons behind both and then I'll let Bob. I mean, Texas Chainsaw Massacre is a movie I watch every year. I'll watch it at least once. Because the first time I saw it, it was so mind blowing to me. And the last scene of that movie is what always, when I think of my music or why this kind of movies inspire me, it's that last scene where she's running out of the house with her face covered in blood, screaming, and jumps in the back of the truck. And, like, you get that feeling of, like, the weakest little, like, blonde girl. Like, she's the one who survived, not her buff boyfriend, not the other buff dudes. That one, and that's why I love it. And I think of it myself like that in certain situations. I'm like, well, I'm the weak one, so I'm going to be the one that survives. Or obviously the Evil Dead, because it's just really good, because it makes this horror and comedy, which me and Bob talked about how those are the same thing. Like,
I'd point out that the second, the sequel to both of those movies are fantastic. Evil Dead 2 is just a freaking phenomenal movie. Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 is hilarious. It's great movies.
Yeah, Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, one of the artists we're going to have on here, I think this season, that's in a metal band, my old friend Casey, that's his favorite movie. So, I agree. It's great because it's funny. But, I mean, and I like the story of how the Evil Dead was made because they basically grassrooted it to the core. They sold tickets to watch part of it in the back of the grocery store they worked on to make money to make the movie, and now they're huge artists. So in both senses, as an artist and just an individual, both those movies inspire me to be better. What about you, Bob?
My answer is easy. Actually, the reason I even thought of this question, one, because Joel works in the music, in the film industry, and because Michael Nesmith passed away this just a few days ago, Michael Nesmith from the Monkees, the only actual musician in the Monkees, the only real rock star. He was friends with Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. He's friends with Jimi Hendrix. He was a very cool dude. And he was also the executive producer of one of my favorite movies of all time, which was Repo Man. Repo Man is the greatest. It's the greatest 80s punk movie there is. It's just, it's phenomenal. It's it's directed by Alex Cox, the guy who later made Sid and Nancy, the other greatest punk movie ever made. But Repo Man's better because it's funny too, and it doesn't end with a massacre. You know, it ends with aliens flying an old car off into space with, you know, it's actually Harry Dean Stanton and Emilio Estevez in the car that had dead aliens in the trunk that allows them to fly off into space, and it turns into a time machine. It's the greatest movie I've ever made. So there you go, Repo Man.
I feel like my answer was kind of weak compared to yours.
Napoleon Dynamite's fantastic.
I'm going to keep it lighthearted.
Okay. My turn for a question here, everybody. The question is, if you were a superhero, who would you be and why? And it's not, if you were a superhero, who would you want to be and why? It's like, if your personality or like things you've experienced in your life, who would that superhero represents? Not just who do I think is dope, because that's how a lot of people like to answer it. But anyways, if you want Bob to go first,
Bob, you go first.
All right. Well, my answer would always, for this one, pretty much always be Batman. But then Kilo told me this, I didn't tell him. He's like, you know, so kids that choose Batman had really shitty childhoods. I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ.
I'm sorry.
Well, I'm not going to say you're wrong. All right. But anyway, so I'll go with Batman. That's my answer. Final answer.
All right. I asked the question. I don't have to go right now.
Oh, come on. I kind of answer it truthfully, but I'm going through all the different.
The first answer in your head is usually the right answer in most situations.
No, so my favorite superhero has always been Wolverine, but I'm not a battle-hardened.
I have seen him. Don't let him talk himself down. I've seen him at metal rods holding his hands together. So in that instant,
Wolverine.
Little pieces. What about Wolverine do you think draws you to that? Since we can't really say why are you like that, because you don't know. Maybe what draws you to that?
Be careful. He's psychoanalyzing you right now. That's what he's doing. He's not just asking you a question.
I do feel like he's always been, he gets ticked off at the little things. True. And I get like, if it's a big issue, that's probably it. Wow. Whoa. I just got you. If the world is about to end, he's totally cool. And he he nuts up and he goes and takes care of business. But if you look at him the wrong way or spill his drink at the bar, he's going to freaking stab in the face. That's kind of me. I get pissed off at the little things, but when shit hits the fan and it's really bad,
So it always goes bad, so then he doesn't have to worry about anything.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So now you.
I have two, but they're from the same series. So first person that comes to mind, and I think everyone in my life will attempt to visit, I think her name is Domino, right? She's from X-Force. Domino is a superhero who, when is asked what her superpower is, she just says she's very lucky. And I've always said to people, I'm the most lucky, unlucky person ever, where things will randomly go right for me in ways like finding Icon, where it's like, that does not happen.
Right.
So just fuck up and stop lying. But for me, things just kind of, me meeting Joel, me hearing Joel drum, me, every instance of my life down to when I play video games with people, I feel like I have this weird lucky force surrounding me going, oh, this will be cool. And it does never look like it's going to work out. Don't you agree from my life? In the Deadpool movie, which is the other superhero I was going to talk about, I think she really portrays her character well in that movie, because it's like she doesn't even try to drive the car half the time, like the big truck thing that's like flying through the city. She's like fucking around fighting people, and the car is like swerving perfectly through the traffic and stuff. And I feel like my life has been like that, where it's like, yeah, shit is going to get broke. Shit's going to go bad. But at the end of the day, we survived. And we didn't cry. Also, I think I'm a little bit like Deadpool, not all the way, but like where I, A, apparently don't die very easily, which is a good thing to have.
Very true.
Just there like little thing over here. But also, like, I don't take anything seriously ever. This, in these interviews, which you guys have watched, you see me be an idiot. And this is me being filtered. You both can attest to that. This is the calm version of me. So it's like, I think it just goes back to my childhood with this motherfucker and like, and his story in the movies. It's like, once you've been through so much shit, you don't give a shit. There's no more shits to give because you've already gone through all of them. So man, it's like, you just go, okay, life is good. I do want all of you who are watching this to comment in the comment section, like what your favorite superhero is that you think you would be like and why. I think it would help you kind of, it helps to do that exercise for you to see where you're at and who, what your life is like. And it's kind of an easy way for me, for instance. I wouldn't look at myself and go, I'm a lucky motherfucker. But if I think of myself in the instance of superheroes, I'm like, no, I am like that. So we'd love to hear why you feel like you're like Batman or not, that I think you're all broken children.
And if you look good in spandex.
We all look good in spandex. So, yeah, I mean, there's, you know, we have the premiere of my video right now for you to go watch. Right.
There you go.
So yeah, enjoy the video, comment, tell us what you think. Keep watching. We'll have more artists on here this season. We'll have lots more next season, and maybe comment an artist that you know most people don't know about and that you might want us to interview, so that then your homies can hear like this dope artist that like you found, right? Because you're like that kid that's like, I heard him first. But in this instance, you can say that. We're giving you permission. Tell us who you think maybe we should talk to or try to contact. So yeah, there we go, guys.
All right.
I appreciate y'all being here, flying all the way to LA and being with us and hanging out.
Yeah, buddy.
Yeah, right. Hey, Joel, it was really nice to meet you. I really enjoyed it. And this was fun.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me.
Right on. And everybody, stick around for Kilo and Joel's video. And rock on. We'll see you next week.
Hey, let's take a minute.